The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey everyone, Jake and Gino here with some exciting news.
The Wheelbarrow Profits podcast is changing to the Jake and Gino Show.
You will still be able to find new episodes every Thursday on YouTube or your favorite podcast streaming service.
It's the same great show with the same great content.
And the same great hosts. You're not going to want to miss an episode.
So be sure to catch us on the next episode of the Jake and Gino Show.
Hi everybody, this is Jake Stanzio, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gene, how's it going?
Stenzi, I'm doing great. How you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. Getting around Thanksgiving, raising a couple hundred thousand meals, bringing the pain, going on our way to a million for these kids. So feeling good about that.
Yeah.
And we got another giver on today's show. Today's guest is a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and ultra marathon competitor who likes to push the limits of success. His latest book, Aspire, shows you how to create your own reality. And even better, the proceeds go directly to his foundation, Caring House Project. So without further ado, Frank McKinney, welcome to the show.
Guys, you know, normally all these podcasts I do from my oceanfront treehouse office, which I wish I was there. I'd spin the camera around, show your whole audience. I truly do live, work out of a treehouse. All seven of my books I wrote from up there and the houses we're going to talk about that I design and build on the ocean, I do that up in the treehouse. But I'm on a book tour for my new book, Aspire, that just was released a little over a week ago, and I am coming to you from some hotel room in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, so you get me fired up right now with the treehouses. I had a treehouse when I was a kid. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. This was my kind of shit. So talk to me about the treehouses and then ultimately a little bit about your background and how this rolled into the latest book, Aspire, because treehouses are just fun, dude. I want to hear more about
that. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a chapter in my new book that talks about how creativity and ingenuity is what's rewarded in business today. And Jake, I hadn't written a book until I built that treehouse. I've written seven books in six genres. So it created this space that allowed me to draw out this creativity and this ingenuity. It's not just your average everyday treehouse. It's on the ocean. It's got 12 windows. It's got a bathroom, a sink, a shower, a king-size bed above my head and a loft. But all of it is in 220 square feet. So it's just my mecca for everything creative. Listen, people that work for me, I closed my main office 15 years ago. So, you know, people, the work at home thing, I had people doing that 15 years ago because, you know, I want to create subtitle to my book, How to Create Your Own Reality. To do that, you can't surround yourself with negativity. When I built that treehouse, you know, that positivity just flowed and flowed and, you know, seven books and six genres later. And some of the most beautiful houses you'll ever see in the world were designed right at my desk in the treehouse.
Frank, let's go back to where you started. You're very similar to Jake. Both of you guys hated school. You didn't do great in school. How did you become successful? How did you get into real estate and, you know, sell some of the most beautiful oceanfront homes out there?
Well, it's not that I hated school. I just hated that school hated me. I would have loved state, but I'm a corn-fed country boy from Indiana. Listen, I grew up on a farm. I'm the oldest of six. My dad worked at a bank. My mom was a school teacher. So four high schools in 4 years, seven stints in juvenile detention, 1.8 GPA out of high school. I had no opportunities other than put myself on a plane with a one-way plane ticket and a $50 bill and land in Florida with everything I had on my back. I might believe in the welfare system and the entitlement systems that are out there, but I was really proud to have a job. The welfare mentality is a very toxic mentality. So I started digging sand traps on a golf course with a bunch of Haitians. I earned the nickname the White Haitian because I had a strong work ethic. I wasn't afraid at 18 years old to show up at 4 a.m. and do my job. Swore off all unhealthy vices and temptations by the time I was 21. I'm a lot less exciting than I look. I go to bed at 9. I get up at 4. Don't drink, smoke, do drugs, overeat, oversleep, gamble, womanize. I'm a nerd in sheep's clothing, says my wife.
You look like a rocker. I'm just saying, like, you could be hanging out with like Tommy Lee and the boys. So,
well, I was around affluence, Jake. Coming from Indiana and landing in Palm Beach, Lifestyles the Rich and Famous was all over me, or MTV Cribs if you're a young person. And I wanted it, but how? You know, no connections, no network, no funding, no education. I became a tennis instructor. After a maintenance worker, I was a tennis instructor. I taught rich people how to hit a better forehand and a backhand. And at the end of their tennis lesson, as a matter of fact, Jake, I didn't let them finish their tennis lesson. I made sure they were too tired to finish their tennis lesson.
Bury that ass.
Again, the purpose was to earn my PhD in entrepreneurship, my master's in real estate, by sitting them down, right, and asking them, how'd you get here? I did that over a 2-year span. And they told me, hey, I'm a 9-to-5er just like you. I happen to have done a little bit better with my real estate investments, Frank. That's where you need to be. Jake, I heard that story over and over again. Some real estate anecdotal ending to somebody who started 9-to-5 doing something else, doctor, lawyer, what have you, inventor. I bought my first crack house in 1987, not to smoke crack in it. I bought it to fix it up and flip it, made $7,000. Didn't do a house worth more than $100,000 for 5 years. So in Gladwell's book, Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blank, it talks about to be an expert in anything, you got to put in 10,000 hours. I look back at my early career and for 5 years, I didn't do a house worth more than $100,000. I got good at the craft of real estate. In 92, I moved to the oceanfront, not physically, but my business. And I started buying houses on the beach, fixing them up, just like they were crack houses. But they had an extra zero on the acquisition price. $750,000 was the cost of my first house. By the way, I skipped from $100,000 to $2 million. There was nothing in between. That when I say $2 million, I bought that house for $750,000, yeah. Put $50 in it.
So what was the switch though, Frank? Yeah. Why 5 years to do up to $100,000 and then from $100,000 to $2 million? What connected? I mean, I know it's mindset. I want to talk about mindset in your book.
I became an expert at the craft of real estate. So it didn't matter the number of zeros behind the acquisition price or the selling price. I knew that I wanted to be an artist in my life. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument. I can't sculpt. I'm learning to paint, but not very well. I build three-dimensional art. I get to create three-dimensional art on a sun-drenched canvas known as the Atlantic Ocean for the most wealthy people in the world. I've done 44 oceanfront properties on speculation. So for those of you who don't know, that's building a house without a buyer in mind with an average selling price of $14 million. The other answer, the shorter answer to your question is, I was tired of doing 20 flips a year under $100,000 with plumbers with their pants falling down and, you know, broken promises and all this stuff. I wanted a quality of life. And I realized I wasn't afraid to exercise that risk tolerance, you know, like a muscle to get to the point where $750,000 is only a zero, mm-hmm. You know? So I was able to jump there and I haven't looked back.
And I want everyone to stop and just think about what Frank just said there. He put in the time. He didn't just wish upon it. He put 5 years of hard work and he became an expert at his craft. And I'm surprised you don't know how to sing. I mean, I can give you a couple of singing lessons when we get off the podcast. I'm doing opera right now. I'm reading your book.
I need them too, bud.
I'm reading your book. You know why? It's funny because you're saying in the book, we need to continue to reinvent ourselves. And my kids have started singing opera and I started singing. I didn't think I had a great voice at all. And it doesn't matter how you start, just do something, aspire to be something else. What inspired you to write the book Aspire?
Very simple. So I 5 different genres before this genre: philosophy, real estate, young reader fantasy, spirituality, Christian romance. I'm not dead yet, but this is a postmortem of the mindset it took to get me to where I am. This is a pure mindset book, not just to get me to where I am. The people that I look up to, Gino, the people mm-hmm. that I aspire to emulate, I went out and I codified. Motivation washes off and goes down the drain with the soap at night. It does not last. As a human species, there's a reason. There's a multi-billion dollar industry.
What is motivation?
Motivation is like a fog. It's like soap on the body. It washes off and goes away. We think you can't. Nobody listening to this can stay motivated. As a species, we were not meant to be motivated. Stay motivated. So inspiration. Let's move to motivation for motivation, inspiration. Inspiration lasts about as long as a bad sunburn, Jake. It will wear off. It'll dissipate after 2 weeks after you watch an inspirational movie. What happens? You're back to the same place. What I realized through aspiration, I was able to create my own reality, alter my DNA, kill the person I was born to become the person I wanted to be.
Let me ask you about that though, because for motivation for me, I have a great partner there and I have an accountability partner. So I'm not motivated all the time. Do you lean on other people to help you with that motivation / inspiration / aspiration?
So motivation and inspiration ignite aspiration. The book talks about identifying these aspirations like a Fabergé egg or a Hope Diamond. It's sacred. I've aspired to five things in my entire life.
Can you share those with us? Yeah, you've gotten them in the book. Can you share those with us?
Yeah, real quick. I mean, some of them took 25 years to get there. By the way, an aspiration is not a goal. A goal you either attain or you don't, and then you move on. An aspiration becomes a part of your DNA. First, I wanted to be a best-selling author, even though I came out of high school with a 1.8 GPA. I used to go home at night and read the freaking dictionary. Because I wanted to speak well, write well equals well-respected. I would sit there, all my friends are out partying, I'm reading the dictionary. Took me a long time. Took me 20 years to get that first book published. I mean, that was 20 years ago. So now, Gino, I'm a best-selling author for the rest of my life, no matter what I do. That's an aspiration that I can check off the box that I have become. I wanted to be a real estate artist. So yes, right now, no, I can't sing, play an instrument or sculpt, but I love three-dimensional art. And I felt like, shouldn't I want to create that three-dimensional art that somebody can actually live in? And it wasn't me that gave myself that title. It was the Wall Street Journal and USA Today that referred to me as a real estate artist. That's another aspiration. I aspired to run the toughest foot race in the world, according to National Geographic. I'd never heard the word ultra marathon in my life. I never even finished a marathon. Yet the Badwater Ultra Marathon, according to National Geographic, is the toughest foot race in the world, 135 miles nonstop through the Death Valley Desert in July in 125 degree heat in the, you know, in the air. On the pavement, it's over 200 degrees. I've finished that race seven times.
Sounds uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
Just a bit.
I aspired to run a charity in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and I had a kind of a broken family. I aspired to have a family. I've been married 31 years and have a beautiful daughter. So those are aspirations. And I'm not motivated or inspired every day to go out and train for one of those races.
But you didn't say a Lambo, though, and have a jet and all this stuff. That's not cool, man. I'm just throwing a wrench in your shit because so many of us see this shit out there on social media with the dude laying across the Lambo and the gold and the bling bling. But you're obviously a very successful individual. And the things that you're aspiring for probably bring you happiness, probably bring you a fulfilled life and enjoyment. And I just want people to get clarity in their lives because so many of us may be aspiring for this shit, these trinkets and this crap. But ultimately, I think once you realize and you get to a point in your life where you can have that stuff, gang, that is not the end of the road. That is like the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. So I want to be clear for people because sometimes I think our alignment and clarity is not there.
Let me tell you something. If you're younger and you're pursuing these type of things, and I've had all kind of cars. I mean, there's nothing wrong.
Not hating either, by the way. I'm not hating. I'm just thinking they may be a little shallow once you get there. So
let me give you this word of warning that the energy that you put in to pursuing those things will never be returned to you in the same intensity that you put into pursuing it. The minute you drive that Lambo off the lot, if you're type A and you kind of like need that, you know, fix in the arm of excitement, by the time the first tank of gas is gone, you've lost interest. You're moving on to some other fix. So there's a chapter in my book that is titled Consumerism with a Line Through It, Materialism with a Line Through It, Philanthrocapitalism, taking the best of capitalism and put it to work and watch what happens to that desire to pursue material things. You will find that dissipate. You'll enjoy them, but they won't become an obsession anymore.
Well, it won't become like the status of the bar. And just from my experience, we got into philanthropy, I don't know, 3-4 years ago or something as our company was growing. And Gino started something called Rand Cares, where we're basically feeding kids throughout the year that can't get food for themselves. And it was very simple. Like, we're like, what do we want to do? What's the basics? And ultimately, we hate being hungry. And these kids don't have the options that we do. So we're providing a great solution. We feel good about it. And it has been the best, and this is not like a selfish thing, but it has been the best culture builder within our family of companies, bar none, because people are coming together and doing that. So when you're talking about philanthrocapitalism, this shit works on many different levels. So I just love what you're saying here.
You know, Jake, we've built 29 self-sustaining villages in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And it's not because we got any government help. We take the best of philanthropy, get rid of the worst. And the rid of the worst is entitlement. You know, charity exacerbates poverty, does nothing to make it better. Self-sustaining villages like we built, I've got 13,000 kids that were, you know, if this was a hamburger, well, it looked like a hamburger. They're eating mud flavored with bouillon and lemon juice. I got 13,000 kids that are living a self-sustaining life now over there because we build these self-sustaining these self-sustaining villages. You don't have to be into the Bible. And if you aren't and you're agnostic or atheist, please don't turn this off. But there's a great life mantra that happens to be a Bible passage. It says, to whom much is entrusted, much is required. To whom much is given, much is expected. It's from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verse 48. I have made that my life mantra. I have been given a lot, man. 1.8 GPA, 7 times in juvenile detention, least likely to succeed. Yet I found my professional highest calling, building these beautiful houses on the ocean on spec and making a lot of money. If you're watching this, what's your spiritual highest calling? Sounds like you guys have found it. That's fantastic. I provide housing to the world's most wealthy who don't even need another house. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't I be providing housing to the world's most desperately poor and homeless? Mm-hmm. That's what we do through our caring house.
Hell of a spectrum.
Wow. I love that. Frank, how do you help people listening to this? How do they find their aspirations? You've got clarity. I still need to work on mine because I feel like as if I'm playing on house money the last couple of years. So I really need to get dialed in and say, okay, what am I going to aspire to next? How do people find their own aspirations?
The first section of Aspire is broken down into describing the difference between motivation, inspiration, and aspiration, and why they motivation and inspiration don't last, and why aspiration will alter the DNA. There's only one chapter in that book that is posed in the form of a question, and this will help you get real clear on your aspirations. What legacy do you aspire to leave behind? What legacy do you aspire to leave behind? Guys, I used to think this real estate artist building the biggest house I ever designed was a $135 million house. I was going to be the first to break the 9-figure spec house. Spent a year in Italy. The most expensive house I ever sold was $50 million. I thought that was going to be my legacy until I realized those homes will be rubble in 20 years, not because I built them poorly. It's because the land renders the structure physically, functionally, and economically obsolete. So my legacy probably will now be what we're doing over in Haiti. And in those first few chapters, answering that question to the mirror, what legacy, Gino and Jake, do you aspire to leave behind? As you're thinking about that answer, what helped me get there? Who do you aspire to emulate? Whose DNA do you aspire to sample that you might want to absorb little pieces into you that will help you answer the question, what legacy do I aspire to leave behind? It is such a powerful exercise.
Who do you aspire to emulate? I love that. And in the book,
can you share yours personally?
I'll share you a couple. And by the way, this is a fun exercise. They don't even need to be real people. I aspire to emulate Willy Wonka.
I thought you were making your own people up, and then they had these like traits that you really enjoyed, so you kind of crafted your own stuff. Well, Wonka, that's where my head goes. Sorry about that. Carry on.
I mean, Willy Wonka isn't a real.
Willy's real to me, bro.
Okay, so what I wanted to do with him. I'm asked by the Wall Street Journal, what's the best business book you ever read? My answer, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Why? Because I want to create the frenzy that guy created for his chocolate. I want to create that with my real estate, with his marketing prowess, with his exclusivity, a little eccentricity, just, you know, otherworldly desire to have a piece of his chocolate. So if you look at some of the grand unveilings that we do, they're very theatrical. There's a little Willy Wonka in there. I aspired to emulate Robin Hood when I was a kid. I love the idea of stealing from the rich and giving to the poor while I'm shooting an arrow at my best friend.
Hold on. I gotta pump the brakes on this because Robin Hood is a big deal to me. Robin Hood was stealing from the tyrannical government to give to the poor that was taxing the shit out of people. Okay. That's the story of Robin Hood. Let's be clear on that because so many people get that twisted. And I love Robin Hood for that exact reason. I'm sorry. I'm just a little passionate about that one. You hit a nerve on that one.
Well, I mean, in the woods of backwoods of Indiana, I would actually put on the tights and go out with my friends and shoot. But I wanted to be able to, I sell houses upwards of $3,000 a square foot. So whether the people I sell to are tyrannical or just rich, I'm able to take some of the proceeds and then do what Robin Hood did. Yes. I get to fulfill that. So I mean, I have a list of people that I aspire to emulate, but that helped me, guys, answer the question, what legacy do I aspire to leave behind?
I love that. Frank, in the book, you talk about mindset and people listening to this may be grinding out a W-2 job, they maybe do something that they're not fulfilled with. Can you talk about why mindset is so important to get it right? Because everyone's like, oh, I'll do it when the weather's better, or I'll do it when I'm ready, or I'll do it when I have enough money in the bank. Let's talk about mindset real quick.
Well, you know, there's a chapter in the book that's titled Get the Mind Right and the Money Will Follow.
Yes.
And you get the mind right in my sport of ultra running, get the mind right, the miles will follow. Get the mind right, the relationship will follow. Get the mind right, the diet will follow. It's all there. So, you know, and part of that is understanding to get to where you want to get, you've got to take these big risks in life. You know, without risk, there's no reward. So I have the one primary advantage I have over many people in this world is I'm afraid every day of my life, but I don't let it stop me. I've learned that fear is associated with a thought of taking a risk, not with the actual taking of the risk. Once you take the risk, the fear goes away. But most people are terrified at that sensation of fear when they think about taking a risk and they walk the other way. if you've got a person listening to this or watching this that says, you know, I'm shackled to my desk with this 9 to 5, I'll do it when I listen to another 50 of Jake and Gino's podcast. By then I'll do it in 2022. You're selling your soul for a freaking paycheck. Listen, on this book tour I'm on right now, I'm stopping at homeless shelters, at soup kitchens, and food pantries. I'm delivering the message of Aspire to homeless people who it's resonating with, to say, look, I might have traded part of my soul for something, but I also get a chance to take that eraser, turn around on the chalkboard of life, and erase what was. If that's you, don't wait till 2022 to do that. Quit selling your soul for a freaking paycheck.
Mentioned a little while ago, born to be versus want to be. And you were saying it very fast. And I've been wanting to go back to that for a second, because so many of us may be born in an environment that's not conducive to success. Maybe we grew up in an abusive household. Maybe we grew up in a dangerous area. Can you elaborate on this? Because it really struck me, but you're going so fast. I didn't want to slow the conversation down. Born to be is not necessarily what you were born to be, but you may have been put in an environment that was not conducive to what you want. That doesn't need to be your destiny. Is that fair to say?
That is such a perfect part of this whole first section of my book, Jake. So I'm going to use that line again. The subtitle of my book is How to Create Your Own Reality and Alter Your DNA. Dumbing it down even further, in the movie Rocket Man, the story of Elton John's life. I'm not a big movie buff, but there was a line in that movie that I just said, and I'm going to repeat it. The manager puts his shoulders on Reginald Dwight, was Elton John's name. The manager puts his hand on Reginald's shoulders and says, looks right in his eyes and says, you got to kill the person you were born to become the person you want to be. So I was very quickly, I was in juvenile detention 7 times after I was 18. It's time to go to jail. My grandfather and father were bankers. I was born to be a banker. You hit the nail on the head. I was born, not me, but you may be listening, born into an abusive family, or I was neglected. That's not a life or death sentence. That's an opportunity for you to take that DNA and kill the person that you were born to be. Some people say, I was born to do this. If you're not sure, when I got on that plane with $50 bill and left Indiana, one-way plane ticket, I killed Frank McKinney and became the Frank McKinney I wanted to become. That is such an important, that's the ultimate mindset hack, is knowing that you can put to death that person that you thought you were supposed to be and born to be. Listen, I get a dress like this. I get to work from a treehouse. I build $50 million houses on spec. I'm on a book tour, and in an hour, I'll be in front of 200 homeless people delivering this message. I mean, I run 100-mile races across the desert. I'm tired of watching people have others create their reality for them. It's time we create our own. Turn off the freaking television, the 3 screens, I call them, right? The phone screen, the computer screen, and the TV screen. Turn it off. Get out there and create your own reality.
So I have 3 calls to action for everybody listening. The first one is buy the book Aspire. The second one is to start choosing your own aspirations, right? This is all personal. Frank, I'm thankful that he shared his, but those are his. We all have our own aspirations. And the third one is kill the person that you were born to be. Kill that person, and that's how you start out. If you can do those 3, by the end of the week, you're going to have a fantastic Thanksgiving. You're going to go into the end of the year, and then New Year is going to be completely brand new, and you're going to be reborn. So those 3, once again, buy the book Aspire, choose your own aspirations, and 3, kill that person. Frank, before we go to the short answer questions, can you touch on that Yugo tour? I thought it was really enlightening that you're actually going on another tour right now. And that one was so enlightening for you that you did a couple of years ago.
So it was actually a year ago, Gino, that I was writing this book. And I decided during COVID that I wanted to get input. I wasn't going to just sit in my treehouse and write this, you know, this mindset book on my own. So I got in my Yugo. For those of you who don't know what a Yugo, Google it. One of the worst cars ever made. It is my daily driver. It's not some, you know.
Is that the one that has like the bed where you could put the swimming pool in the back? Like it's the car with the flatbed truck. Dude, is that a Yugo?
No, it's a
I always wanted to put a hot tub in back one of those things.
Just think of Eastern Europe. Think of Eastern Europe, 1970s. I mean, it's got like, it's just a piece of crap, yeah, basically, right?
Listen, Jake, it's 0 to 60 and never. And if you were to put a hot
tub in the truck, I got you.
It would fit in a thimble. That's how small this car is. The heaters it has on the back of the window, you know, when the fog, the defroster, those are there to keep your hands warm when the car breaks down. It's one of the worst cars ever made. I can say I experienced a miracle, because I drove that car from Florida all the way across the country, gathering information for Aspire, all the way to Death Valley. and back to South Florida, 6,288 miles. And guys, I was asking that question, what legacy do you aspire to leave behind? Getting information back from that. And I asked another question that is found at the very end of the book. If we get a chance to go to it, we'll bring it up. But my Yungo is still going strong. Not on this tour. I experienced a miracle once. I ain't pushing my luck again.
Hey, man, you got to watch out for your back, all right?
But real quick, what did you learn? What did you learn in that tour? What was the enlightenment from that tour? I mean, obviously, you're reading the book. What came from it?
I became so much more optimistic about the United States because it was the height of COVID. People were living in fear. They were so eager to come out from behind a mask in many of these places and share that legacy story or legacy, what they wanted their legacy to be. And I also asked them to share this Hebrews 13:2 story. Hebrews 13:2 very quickly says, be sure to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. I asked that question. Oh my gosh, the answers I got. But when I got home, I had this renewed, and I was interviewing young people, 18-year-olds all the way up to 80-year-olds. I mean, we aren't as effed up as the media says we are. This country is there, man. I was so refreshed after that.
I think it's a powerful statement. I completely agree with it. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, buy right, manage right, and finance right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we're back. My boy, the big G Daddy over there, and he always likes to say, think big, start small. And you're a classic example of that. You put in the 10,000 hours. Can you elaborate on that a little bit and the benefit of that? Because you started, you became a professional, you became an expert before you leveled up. I just want you to elaborate on that a little bit, because so many people get online and you're talking about the screens. They see Instagram, and we're in the multifamily space. Some jerk off over here just closed a 400, 500 unit deal. We have no idea what the equity behind that was. We have no idea if he raised money, blah, blah, blah. But he's out there promoting it. And I'm not hating on the promotion. What I'm cautioning people about, especially the people early on getting started in multifamily, is get something done and get damn good at it. And then get to that point. Don't feel like you got to go from zero to hero overnight. And I just want you to elaborate a little bit more on your experience, because I think that'll be telling for folks.
Very quickly, there is one page in Aspire. There's one graphic in Aspire. At the beginning of chapters, there's some pretty artwork, but one graphic, and it's a clock, 3, 6, 9, and 12. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
At 12 o'clock, you're excited about investing in multifamily, let's say. You have excitement. You've watched podcasts. You've bought the programs. You've gone to the seminars, and you're living on excitement. At 3 o'clock, that excitement wears off and you want to jump from multifamily to single family to short selling to wholesaling. You never become an expert at anything. You expect to become an overnight success. Your attention span is as short as a flea's. At 3 o'clock, you become a flea and you hop from one thing to the next. Don't be a flea. 3 o'clock. Let's say the excitement wears off. You make it past three. You get to 6 o'clock. That's when the job gets hard. That's when I show up on a job site with the power not on yet, and somebody took a crap in my toilet, and I got to clean it out with a shop vac. Then I got to clean the crap out of the shop vac. And I say to myself, I don't want to do it. This is too hard. I'm going to go do wholesaling, or I'm going to do short selling. I'm going to buy storage units or Airbnbs. I'm not going to do this. It's too freaking hard. So you're not a flea because you made it past the excitement stage. You get to six, you're a half-asser. There's a lot of half-assers out there. And there, in my book, if you've seen it, Gino, there's a picture of half of an ass, not a person's ass, but a donkey coming through the door because it's, life gets too hard for you and you freaking quit. Don't be a flea. Don't be a half-asser. You get to 9 o'clock. You're almost there. You can see the finish line. You are so enamored with the process that you forget about the purpose. It's like the guy in college who is 2 credits away and never goes back to finish. It's like the person who takes all the courses, all the classes, and yet he can't pursue the finish line. He sees it. I call you a shoelacer. You're not a flea. You're not a half-asser. You forgot why you got into this business in the first place. I'm a real estate artist. I'm a businessman first, real estate artist a distant second. But that artistry, I don't want to be a starving artist. I'm not an artist until it sells, until somebody takes my three-dimensional art, pays me $15 million for it, and is enjoying it. I've been close to being a shoelacer because I get so involved in the process. There have been times I forgot about the purpose. Don't do that. Come back to 12. And Jake, what you are when you've done that, you've completed the circle, you're an executioner. That's the title of that chapter, be an executioner in life.
Be the punisher, baby. So here's the deal. You're talking about aspire. You can choose the person that you want to be. Between aspiring and that person that you want to be is a boring ass multifamily vehicle. Okay. It's boring. Guys, multifamily is bleeping boring. I really want to start swearing right now, but it's boring as shit. It can get you to that life and that person that you want to be. And if you want to do philanthropy, whatever the case may be, but that shit is boring. So if you wake up hot and you're pumped, it's an amazing vehicle, but it's not super sexy, but it can get you to where you want to be if that's your vehicle. So you need to listen to what he's saying right now and have the staying power and the wherewithal to get to where you want to be in life, because it's not going to happen overnight. Don't be the flea. Don't be the shiny object. I see G-Dad chomping at the bit. You got to say something. I see you get like ready to go here.
When I read that chapter with Frank, it really dawned upon me why we become successful at Jake and Gino. When we started back in October of 2015, we wrote the book and I was in my basement with you recording those videos with the heater there. It's 40 degrees.
With the chili
basement.
And I had the Disney blanket on. I remember well.
I'm like, yes. What the hell are we doing here? Are we monetizing this? And for me, it was selfish gratification because what Frank did for 2 years, I was doing it with Jake and Gino, interviewing amazing people, writing a book and learning. By 6 o'clock, I'm like, should I be doing this? I don't know what the hell I'm doing this for. For some reason, October 17, 18 comes along. We hire a salesperson in 18. Frank, you've met him, Josh. 9 o'clock comes and I'm like, do I have the real clearness of what I'm doing here? Why am I doing this? And for me, it dawned on me that I wanted to create an amazing company. I wanted to leave an impact. I wanted to be a role model to my children. I wanted to really help people leave their job. And you know, the pain that they had working at a W-2 that I had in my life, really, I guess sort of to aspire, but to create a community of like-minded individuals. And by the time 12 o'clock has come around, I have my true purpose now. And it's not about monetizing. It's about creating impact for others. And it's also selfish. I love doing this. I love getting emails from people saying, hey, you've changed my life. I love having these internal boot camps where every 2 months we get together with the students. And for me, it's gotten me through COVID and I've learned so much and I've grown so much. So everyone should really read that book and think about it.
When you grinded it out though, Gino. You grinded it out and you stuck with it.
3 years, it was $0. And I was fortunate because I had a portfolio with Jake and I was making enough money to create my passion and do what I love to do. But I also had my partner. But if I didn't have that clarity in why I was doing it, and if I didn't stick with it, I mean, we wouldn't be here right now. So I love that chapter. Thanks, Frank.
Sure. Well, you know, the take the lunch pail approach to life. I talk about that in the book. Pack it in, show up every day, day in and day out. Listen, 97% of our days are spent pursuing the 3% extraordinarily golden moments in life. Do the math. That's about 10 days out of the year that are extraordinarily golden that you're going to put 355 days of packing the lunch pail and showing up. Then eventually this aspiration as you've identified will present itself on a rare occasion, but you've got to be prepared for that. And unfortunately today's attention spans, like when you guys are a little younger than me, but you all know the elevator pitch, the elevator speech. You get in the elevator on the first floor, you push 20, you got 20 floors to tell what you do. Nowadays, the elevator pitch has been modified to be you and I, Gino, are on the 20th floor. We get into the cab, we push 1 and the cable breaks. You have that much time, the time it takes that cab to fall to the first floor to make your impression. That's how attention spans are short. So of course, in your copywriting, you're going to do that. In your post, you're going to do that. But don't allow that to permeate over into your lunch pail approach and showing up every day, day in and day out. And eventually you step back and say, whoa, I'm a real estate artist. Like it worked. Took me 20 years, but I made it.
Yeah. And that's going to separate you from a lot of these jabronis out there that are not willing to put in the time and the work. So I think it's a competitive advantage for sure.
I thought we were the jabronis.
I am the jabroni.
Okay. Okay.
Hey, all right.
I've never heard that word. I'm going to use that today. I love that. That's the greatest word I ever heard.
You just look at Jake and Gino. We're two jabronis. I mean, what?
Jabroni show. This is awesome.
Hey,
I get my talk at the homeless shelter today. I'm going to say, don't be a jabroni. Jake said, don't be a jabroni.
I was on with these couple of jabronis today, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but we had some fun. And don't be the jabroni out there. Yes.
I love it.
Hey, I love asking people their best habit for success. We have some really cool people like yourself on. I want to hear if there's anything that you could share with the folks that you do on a daily or weekly basis that has helped you.
Two things. The first thing is I exercise my risk tolerance like a muscle. I'm constantly exercising my risk threshold to the point where it becomes a natural occurrence for me to consider doing a $50 million house. The biggest risk I ever took was leaving the tennis court. I was making $100,000 a year as a 19-year-old. I bought a Ferrari from what I don't say that to impress you, to impress upon you that I was making a good living as a tennis
player. Dude, pro. A Ferrari at 19 is pretty sweet.
I did. Yep. All from teaching tennis. I was teaching a woman who owned the dealership. So she made me a really good deal. But yeah, there was perfect.
I gotcha.
How to pay for it, but I got a good deal.
Mrs. Robinson, right? Yeah.
Leaving that tennis court, though, and that secure job and buying that crack house and making $7,000 on it back in the day, that was a big risk. And I realized, so people that are listening to this, it's the thought, as I said, of taking a risk that induces fear. If you exercise your risk tolerance on a regular basis, you'll be able to take greater and greater risks. That is the most important thing I can impart upon you, is to take those risks, use that muscle, strengthen it, and then it will become second nature to go out and risk.
Fortune favors the bold. Yeah. Something like that.
That's right. That is exactly right.
Any tips for people starting to scale up their business? I think so many people, and I know from and this is why I asked, because from personal experience, that was a snafu. That was a stalled point for us when we were kind of growing without scaling properly and getting out over our skis. Any kind of advice for folks?
I'm so over those words, scale up your business. I'm just going to, when it's time, you'll know. If all you're worried about is scaling up, you're not ready. I was thrilled for 5 years to be doing $100,000 houses. I had no aspiration to do oceanfront mansions. It was time. You know, so that was a massive scale up, 100,000 to 2.2 million. But I didn't.
Let me refine the question, because we may be missing here, because ours was a lack of systems and kind of professionaling up. And that's kind of where I'm getting, not necessarily scaling to grow. We were scaling and growing, but it was about the growth fueling without the focus and attention to the business development that was needed. And I think that's more specifically what I'm asking about, because that's where, what was tripping us up. We were growing, not for the sake of growing. I mean, it was awesome. We were loving it, but then we're like, oh shit, you know, we don't have the processes in place here to create a well-oiled machine. And that's where we were getting tripped up.
Very okay. Thank you for the clarification. So, a right brain, left brain. So I was brought up a left brainer. I was statistical, analytical. I was a banker. I took me a decade to wake up the right side of my brain. So now people, oh, you're a real estate artist. You're so creative. I toggle back and forth in nanoseconds between right brain and left brain. The people I look up to are able to do that. What I realized, and when you said the word systems, even though I'm an artist and I create these beautiful homes, I systemize as much as I can when I'm creating these homes to the, and I'm anal when it comes to that. Listen, you go through, I have a house that has 12 bathrooms in it. Every single toilet paper is folded to a perfect diamond tip point, and I'm the one folding them. So that's how detailed minded I am.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You're tipping the TP in these houses.
Going further, Jake.
To this day. It's pretty gangster.
I have taught people how to do it, but they can't do it as well as me. I was at the Ritz.
He's got the I'm a mentality, Gino.
Well, you make $50 million in a house. I mean, you go do anything.
Listen, I wish I should have brought a piece of toilet paper in the room. I was at the Ritz in Paris, not the Ritz-Carlton, the Ritz in Paris, France, on New Year's Eve 20 years ago. I went in the bathroom in my room. I got a real nice suite. And the way they folded that toilet paper, I couldn't get off the toilet. I was enthralled. I took it off. That's awesome. Took it off. I put it between the pages of a book. I took it home and I deconstructed how they folded it. And to this day, that's how every single one of my bathroom toilet paper is folded. The point is, I'm systemizing as many things as I can. so that I leave enough room on the right side of the brain to be creative. I'm providing three-dimensional art that's the ultra wealthy. Like, I have to know what they want before they want it, before they know they want it.
Yes.
And if I didn't systemize, if I didn't spend a little time on the left side of the brain to systemize, I wouldn't be able to sit back and create, you know, countertops made out of lava from France that are they're blue as the ocean. Or I built a water floor in a house. When you walked in the front door of the foyer, you're 400 square feet. You're walking on glass as thick as your drive-up teller's glass. And beneath it is water and fish swimming around. I designed the only jelly sphere in the world. It's a jellyfish sphere, a tank. If I didn't systemize on one side, I wouldn't have the bandwidth to be creative to do that on the other side.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they got to go hand in hand. Besides Aspire, any books that you want to recommend to the folks that have helped you out over the last few years?
There's two, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Please read that from a marketing perspective. There was no better marketer than Willy Wonka. For philosophy, there's an obscure philosopher that I am actually on my seventh read through one of his books. So I don't just say, you know, what bothers me is people, I read 50 books last year, but he's the same freaking guy. He didn't change. 50 books and you're the same person. Anthony DeMello, write it down. Anthony DeMello is a philosopher. He was actually a Jesuit priest who turned philosopher and died in 1987. I'm reading his book, Awareness, for the seventh time in this year. Okay, so I read it 10 years ago. I pulled out. That's how long it takes me to make sure that if I'm going to affect some change in my life and alter my DNA, I can't just do it by reading pages.
I grind in on books like 3-4 times when I find value in them. I'm the same way. Yeah, instead of like, you know, putting some new shit in just because it was on Amazon or whatever. I'm with you on that one. All right, before we get to the GDAD wrapping the sucker up, Aspire, where do we get it? Is Amazon the spot? Do you have a website? Where do we go to get the goods here?
But the cool thing about Aspire is every book that we sell provides 200 meals in one of our orphanages in Haiti. So I make no money from my books. To learn about the book, theaspirebook.com. Sample chapters. There's a sample audible there. There's a description. There's videos. Yeah, I mean, buy it from us. I'll sign it to you and send it. We make a little bit more money, but this is my first book that I self-published under Caring House Books. So this is my own label. Amazon, we make almost as much money. So yeah, please do so. Because we, even if you're, you know, you're not into the book, which you should be, you're providing 200 meals in one of our orphanages.
Now, we got the folks on this show are definitely into the book. I mean, that's in line with our values. And, you know, you're giving back to some folks there as well. So a lot of good. Gino, first crank. Let this sucker rip. Let's do this.
Jake, this could take me like 15 minutes just to recap Frank's life. But just give me about a minute or two, everybody. You have a juvenile delinquent, 4 high schools in 4 years in Indiana, running around the woods shooting crossbows. At the age of 19, he goes down to Florida. He's driving a Ferrari, from what we hear, doing tennis lessons. But don't forget this, everybody. He's a grinder. He grinded it out. He worked his ass off. He started buying $100,000 homes. And for 5 years, he did that. He learned the craft. And then from there, started adding zeros on there. And what I love more than anything else, he became the best version of himself. I guess that's probably the best way to do it, through Aspire and through aspirations. And not worrying just about motivation, but be having those 5 aspirations that he's listed out in his book, and all of the different ideas and topics and mindset, which is really important. And now during holiday week, when most of us are going to be home with our family, he's in a car in Flagstaff, Arizona, talking to 2 jabronis on a podcast, pitching his book and talking to homeless people. So if that's not living a full life and being inspired and being inspirational to others, I don't know what is. I want everyone to go out, buy the book, Aspire. And I want to thank Frank for taking the time out today to talk to us.
You jabronis were the best 2 jabronis I've ever talked to. It was great. Hey, listen, have a happy Thanksgiving. And I you guys were a fantastic couple of hosts. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks, we Frank. Appreciate
Take
it.
Take care, fellas.
Take care, everybody.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Together with Delta, we're putting 5G into the hands of ground staff so they can better assist on-the-go travelers with real-time information. From the Delta Sky Club to the Jet Bridge, this is elevating customer experience. This is Delta with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.